Welcome back to the Hoops Temple Podcast. I'll be your host today. I'm Aaron, or possible chairs. Joining me is Dylan from New Zealand. How you doing?
Doing good, Aaron. Good morning to you.
Fantastic morning it is. No Nate this week. Any Lakers talk is on the table, although they're not our focus this week. Our team of last week was the Sixers. And what a week to watch them. Their opponents being the Pistons twice and the Hornets. That was the best five-game stretch in NBA history by a team, reaching almost plus 160. No team in a five-game stretch had ever accomplished such a feat. What was it like watching the best team of all time?
Man, I was just about to say, it was really fucking boring. Like, I hate blowouts. Like, I hate non-competitive basketball. That's why, like, all these teams, like, before this week, you would not catch me watching a Pistons game or, like, a Hornets game or the Wizards, who I think they also played, like, over the past stretch. Like, I hate watching bad basketball and I hate watching blowouts. And we got the Sixers in the biggest blowout week of freaking NBA history.
In NBA history. I wrote down for the first Pistons game, my note was James Wiseman torture. I felt like it was torture on me having to watch him play, and then it was torture for him having to guard Embiid. Embiid ended these games in like 5.5 minutes. He'd go out there and pace the other team in terms of scoring. He'd give them exactly what their entire team was capable of. Kind of dick around, and then the game would be over by halftime.
Yeah, I mean, it was just absolutely ridiculous. And it's kind of hard to learn a lot from these types of games. Like, the point of, you know, team of the week is that we can tune in, we can figure out what makes them tick, the way they play. But I don't know if there's a lot to discern from, you know, James Wiseman just being obliterated play after play by, you know, possibly the best player in the league this season, or the guy having the best season.
What do you mean? You tell me the Sixers aren't the greatest team ever? I thought we learned that. I thought we figured that out. The Sixers this season are the best offense. They pass the Pacers. The Pacers are literally only trying on offense. That's their entire strategy. And the Sixers are, at this point, I know they picked up a couple of ridiculous wins, but they're tough. They're the fifth best defense and the best offense in the entire NBA. I mean, it wasn't even close.
Yeah. Yeah, and number one in net rating with a expected win rate of about 66 games.
Jeez, man. My goodness. I feel like I just feel like the Harden theory, although it's interesting because we're going to talk about the Clippers at some point, I'm sure, getting rid of what he was
naturally
doing. Like, well, he was finding Embiid in his spots, whatnot. I just feel like Maxey and the rest of his guys are able to find Embiid in the flow of the game.
It's almost like Embiid finds himself now. I feel like, you know, the way that Nick Nurse's system differs from Doc Rivers, and that James Harden was, like, you know, one of the most frequent and dominant pick and roll players in the league. And Tyrese Maxey, I pulled the numbers, is he only runs the 34th most pick and rolls in the by frequency. Like, Fred VanVleet and Derrick Rose run more pick and rolls than he does.
Whoa.
Always catching strays. But yeah, and that means more position, more, you know, not like he's always had a lot of positions because he's got a ridiculous usage rate. Like, he's always shooting. But it's Embiid is able to create the offense rather than, you know, have Harden find him in his spots or post up. The most notable way that they do that, which I'm sure you saw, and through those horrific blowouts, and which I pulled the numbers on, is they've really become a handoff team. And Nick Nurse has never been a big pick and roll guy. Like, the Raptors don't run pick and rolls when he was with them, but they did run a fair amount of handoffs. And so last year under Doc Rivers, they were a big pick and roll team, and they would almost never run handoffs. They were 29th in the league. Like, they had Joel Embiid, and they would just never throw him the ball and have a guy run off of him. You know, going back to, like, the J.J. Redick days is the how far you've got to go back to find someone who would just, you know, run past Embiid when he's got the ball and let him create an offense. But they're now up to 6th in the league in the handoff frequency. So they are giving the ball and they're to Embiid, and they're empowering him more than ever to be the one that's creating the opportunities and creating the advantages.
That's just been so awesome, really. And before the season, I had predicted Embiid not to be in the top five for MVP voting due to historical precedent of MVPs that bombed in the playoffs and what that looked like. Also the Harden drama and just what this team is even going to look like. But he has been awesome. And you said he's arguably having the best season right now. And I think that's right. I really do. And like, are we looking like, is this back-to-back Embiid MVP seasons? And before you answer that question, I did notice the handoff stuff. I didn't dive deep into the numbers, but watching them, I mean, I watch a lot of Kings basketball and Sabonis only hands the ball off. That's kind of like his thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is way unfair. Like they're using a guy like the best scoring center in the league in this spot. And he's able just with his passing ability and his height, just to kind of like guys can just orbit around him and he's able to find these shooters and cutters. And like Marcus Morris is shooting like 55% from three as a Sixer this season. And so having those guys be on fire as well, I mean, that you couldn't stop him.
Yeah. On the MVP stuff, it's kind of interesting in that it's sort of similar to Jokic last year where you have this guy who has a dominant regular season, is a, you know, deserving MVP, has a disappointing playoffs, but then comes back and is somehow even better in the regular season. And you're like, well, I don't want to give him MVP again after he just, you know, disappointed me in the playoffs. But he was MVP last year and now he's even fucking better.
He's way better. It's this crazy Nick Nurse thing where you find just the passing is so much better. And like I mentioned this so many times before, Embiid early on in his career, 2017, 2018, just got crushed by double teams. I can't imagine trying to double him right now. Like he'd pick you apart. Like only,
yeah.
Like really only Jokic could do.
Yeah. I've actually got a nice stat for you on that. Assist percentage. So the total number of field goals that are assisted by that player when they're on the floor. It's a mouthful. Only Jokic and Draymond are ahead of Embiid among bigs. And another interesting stat, this one was from Jared Dubin had this. The coach that double-teamed Embiid the most historically was Nick Nurse. He would double him on the catch on a third of his possessions. So not even like when he's put the ball on the floor, not even when he's in the lane, but just as soon as he gets the ball in the post, Nick Nurse would double him one in three times. And so, like, who better to find a scheme for this guy to play out of that than Nick Nurse? You know, you brought up Sabonis, who the way that he posts up and runs handoffs is more at the top of the key. And I think historically we've seen Embiid more on, like, the traditional sort of low post block, you know, on the wings where the passing angles are more difficult. It's harder to kick out to players. And I think we've seen Embiid move more towards that sort of top of the key area where Sabonis and where Jokic like to play. And that has worked out incredibly well for him. He's averaging a career high in assists at 6 per game, up from 4.2. His assist to usage percentage, there's an interesting one, is up from 0.65 to 0.83. And so you're totally spot on that, like, this guy is now not only, is he leading the league in scoring? I think he's doing that too. He's not only the most dominant scorer, but his ability to read the game and make the passes and the positions that he's put in by his coach are now so improved that, like, you cannot, you know, double team him on a third of his catches.
You just couldn't. And on top of that, double teaming him leaves Tyrese Maxey open. And Maxey has been just a machine this season. He's still shooting about 40% from three. He's efficient from every spot. He's just a blur even without the ball. And those, like, cuts, he can just start barreling towards the rim at like half court, and you run like a pseudo fast break, or it's like, holy shit, Tyrese Maxey's running really quick, but really fast, like no one can stay in front of him. Maxey in the Hornets game had 5 threes in the second quarter, and it wasn't like spot up threes. They were like crazy sidestepping, step back, like crossover threes. It just, do you think that, I mean, God, it's so stupid because they beat like the three worst teams of all time. But I don't know who I'm taking over the Sixers right now. And they look so good. I need them to play a team that doesn't suck. And I could really try to figure this out.
Yeah. And just on Maxey, we've seen big point production increase from him from about 20, I think, to about 25 points per game. But not only is he scoring more, like we said, he's not doing it so much as the creator. Like, he's not running a lot of pick and roll and getting his own shots. You know, a lot of this is moving off the ball, is spotting up, is running off handoffs from Embiid. And despite that, his assist numbers have gone up massively from 3.5 a game to 6.7 per game. So he's able to not only create that space while playing a lot off the ball, but getting downhill, having guys like Tobias Harris, having Marcus Morris shooting 50%. You know, Kelly Oubre has never seen a shot that he didn't like. You've got, you know, Nick Batum, who never shoots unless he's wide open in the corners, but somehow I don't think I've seen him miss a corner three. You know, he's got these guys around him who are able to convert those shots, and the reads are becoming simpler for him.
I believe Batum has the highest shooting percentage in the league. I think it's like 109 or something. Surprised.
I think he has the lowest usage rate in the league as well.
the Sixers' next game is against the Wolves, and maybe they lose by 50 because they forgot how to play an NBA team. But we have to touch on, we have to segue into the Pistons' current losing streak, because that part of that was the Sixers whooping on them. Have you seen a worse team? Have you ever watched worse basketball than current Detroit basketball?
I mean, you got to go back to like some of those process Sixers teams to find a team that does nothing well, which is the craziest part. Like, there are a lot of bad teams, but normally you can point at something. It's like, okay, this team's really bad, but at least they force a lot of turnovers. Or like, this team's really bad, but they are, you know, they're actually good at defensive rebounding. The Pistons are terrible in every facet of offense and somehow also terrible in every facet of defense. I thought that they might see some improvement getting some of these veterans back. Like, Bojan Bogdanović is a good NBA player, and even with him on the floor, they still are, you know, historically terrible.
It's just insane, because you have to ask the question, like, what would you do for a win? For one win? For one NBA win, what would you do? And they held on to Bogdanović last season, and they're like, we're not trading him. He's coming back, and he's going to play for us. And watching those games, he is so important. He has like 30 pieces for them. Like, he is like the best, on occasion, the best player on that team. Their current losing streak is 23. The single season record is 26. I don't know why. I don't know why they keep, because the record is 28. I think that's fucking dumb, because it's like the process Sixers and then the first two games of the next year, and they counted that. I think that's dumb. Oh. It's an entirely different team.
Yeah.
But the process Sixers were bad on purpose, and that was like year one of the most like devastating intentional rebuild of all time. And this is year four, where you've had the number one overall pick, and you've had high lottery picks, and you've traded for other high lottery picks. I just don't see what a win looks like for them. Because the other thing is, like, 3-point shooting was like the great equalizer. Everyone could win any game because you get hot from three. This team cannot shoot. They can't shoot. Like, there is no unit. Like, their hot game from three is an average game for other teams. They would have
it's to like a 7 of 17.
Yeah, seriously. I think looking at their team, like, oh, can I find their, I don't know if I can find their per game or their team stats on their page. I'll have to go into the NBA tab. But what are they shooting from three? I know they're like okay for, like, percentage wise, but they just can't make them. Or they don't take a lot of them. Looks like, oh no, they get. No, that's a fucking lie. They have the worst 3-point percentage in the league.
Yeah. And also second worst frequency.
Jesus.
They're 29th in the league in 3-point frequency and last in the league in percentage.
At some point, I had checked that. I think like maybe around like lost 15, and they were like average, like 35%, but they didn't take very many. And now it's just like, yeah, let's say they do get hot, and it's 10 made threes. Like, whoa, Isaiah Stewart's on fire. He's like 3 of 6 or something. What do you think? Where do you go from here?
You can't win games like that unless you've got LeBron and it's an in-season tournament final. Like, you can't just not take any threes and expect to win games. On like the process Sixers point, like, it is insane that team was, you know, these are comparable teams. One of those teams was like starting Tony Roten and actively trying to lose games. And one of them's got like Bojan Bogdanović and Cade Cunningham, who was on the freaking, you know, Team USA. Was it the select team, actually? But either way, a highly considered NBA player. It's not just that, but it's the intention. The fact that the Sixers were trying to lose, and this Pistons team for multiple seasons has been trying to improve and trying to win. Coming into this season, they thought that they were going to be a play-in team. Like, they were trying to win games. They brought back veterans. They, you know, expected development from the young guys. They honestly believed that they were a play-in team, and now they're the worst team of all time.
The 93, am I muted? I'm not. Okay.
No, you're
good. The 93 Mavs and the 2012 Bobcats are kind of in a universe on their own because they were the worst team in the league on both ends, like historically bad on both ends of the floor. And that's never really been replicated before. But after that, you can have that conversation. Like the 73 Sixers win 9 games, but also at the time that division, they had to play Boston like 14 times, and Boston wins like 68 games because they just keep on whooping on this sorry Sixers team. Where now it's like you play everyone like 4 or 5 times, and I just don't see I can see the Pistons being worse than the Sixers team because of the strength of schedule.
Yeah, I mean. Have you seen the latest news on how they're trying to address this, which is targeting Tobias Harris at the trade deadline? Do you think that's the way that the Pistons should be moving? Is that the way that they can get a win in an NBA game?
That is the most desperate I've ever seen a team. And I've been a part of the longest playoff drought ever in trading, and we traded away Tyrese Halliburton for like a win now player. That was desperate. That would be insane desperation. I guess it just depends on what you're giving up. Like, is it just Bogdanovich? And it's like, all right, now we have, I guess it's better, right? Bogdanovich is older, Tobias is younger, they're about as good as each other. Makes sense, right?
I mean, but if you're trading Bogdanovich out, you're making your team worse while adding that player. And so they've got to trade out someone like, you know, maybe it's Jaden Ivey or it's Jalen Duren that they're moving in order to just get to an NBA one.
Maybe. I don't think the Pistons are a nothing team. A nothing team, and these exist, you can go find them. The 80s Clippers have a couple of them where they're not right at any point. None of their players were good, had been good, or were going to be good. And I don't think the Pistons are there, where I think some of these guys might be good eventually, but it's just the wrong time. Here's something. In the 2020 season, the worst teams in the league. Let's go 2021, because I feel like it makes a little more sense, because the bubble COVID kind of looks weird. Were the Magic, the Cavs, the Rockets, the Thunder, the Timberwolves, and the Pistons. And every other team has figured that out. Everyone but the Pistons has figured it out.
Did any of those teams, I guess in Anthony Edwards, I was going to say, did any of those teams draft a prospect that was better than Cade? And Anthony Edwards is probably the...
Yeah, and they got Ant and Chet Holmgren, Shingun.
All right.
They had some good pieces. We mentioned the Sixers. They traded James Harden. When the Harden trade happened, I bashed on it. I thought it was stupid. And then it was stupid. It looked really dumb. But now, all of a sudden, the Clippers can't stop winning. How's it going over there? What's it like?
Yeah, what was it like, a 5-game losing streak into a 7-game winning streak?
It looks like
it's an 8-game winning streak now.
I think it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 game winning streak. And yeah, they had dropped 6 in a row, and then 1-3 in a row and split a couple. And then now all of a sudden 15-10.
Yeah. Including wins over the likes of the Nuggets and your Sacramento Kings.
Yeah. Not even close against the Kings too. We didn't stand a chance.
There's like a Jazz and a Blazers win in there, I think, which is somewhat less impressive. But the rest of them are against real teams. I think the Warriors we played maybe a couple times, and the Mavs. Yeah. I don't remember if I articulated this. I think I would have. But the idea of just like James Harden is a massive piece to figure out how to play around. And the Clippers took some time to figure it out. But I think now they really have figured it out. One of the big things that Ty Lue realized is that when you play James Harden and Russell Westbrook together, it's a disaster. It is just terrible. And all you know, that massive losing streak was, let's play these two guys on the floor at the same time with Zubats, who also, isn't a great compliment to Westbrook because he can't shoot at all. And then you have Westbrook volunteering to go to the bench, or at least being told that he's going to the bench, but he can claim to have volunteered for publicity. You move out... PJ Tucker has been excluded from the rotation. The guy who does absolutely nothing on offense and, you know, holds that classic, does absolutely nothing on offense and holds the opponent's best player to an efficient 50 points. He's been moved out for, at first it was a rookie and now it's Amir Coffey. He's sort of like a coach's player, you know, he tries hard. But then Daniel Tice has also been a big add. coming from the Pacers where he was doing nothing as like the third center, this guy can is like putting up good rim protection numbers. He's been positive defensively, and he can shoot. And that's really important when you've got Russell Westbrook on the floor. That's the way that Russell Westbrook has been able to succeed as a second unit guy, where now you have the Clippers starting lineup is one of the best in the league, with Terrence Mann in there instead of Russell Westbrook. Just to link it back to the Sixers on that thought, they have the best five-man lineup in the entire NBA as they're starting five now that Batum is in. So shout out to Nico Batum. But the Clippers have figured out the lineups, and I think that was the important thing for Ty Lue, was figuring out the lineup, figuring out how these guys succeed and how they can get into the positions in which they can make shots while having three guys who really are best with the ball in their hands. But the players around them has been the key, and Ty Lue's finally figured that out.
I think it's really great. I just think I'm happy to see that experiment work out. As funny as it would have been for it not to work out, it's much better basketball to watch.
Like a 22-game losing streak? you would have enjoyed that?
I would have watched every game. I really would have. They settled in. They had a lot of really funky pieces. I mean, I can't think of a team that has been such kind of an awkward fit. But with some time, they've settled in. And the big thing is Kawhi Leonard has played every single game. 25 games. What's happening? Again, Paul George has only missed one as well, and Kawhi is having like this close to 50-40-90 season. He has been just spectacular. Man, I feel like we buried him. We buried the Clippers, and all of a sudden, they're back from the dead. How do you feel about your long-term chances against like teams like the Nuggets or the Lakers?
Yeah, and that's the big thing is like the Clippers were always this good when their guys played, when Kawhi and Paul George and whoever the thrown random third guy was. If those guys were all on the floor, this was a really good team. And the difference this season has been those guys have all played. I saw a stat that James Harden, what did we say? He's played like 15 games for the Clippers. I think it's 18. He has already played more games with Kawhi and Paul George than he played with Kyrie and KD in the entire Brooklyn experiment.
That's insane. That's that right? My goodness.
Hey,
wow.
I saw it on a Twitter graphic. It has to be.
Can't be false. There's no they don't get those wrong. Man. I mean, no. That seems about right. And I guess the thing with Harden is he was happy in Brooklyn. He was happy with Philly. Like, we've seen great stretches of basketball from him. Like, can he keep this going though? Another part, like, Bones Highland isn't playing anymore, is he? Like, he's been out of rotation for a long time. That was another thing they figured out. Is Bones Highland, okay, I need a term for this where it's like what the player thinks they are and what they really are. And they're the distance between that. I need like a
it's
name.
Like the Reggie Jackson index.
Yeah. Like the Reggie Jackson index. I don't know. The Bones index is pretty, kind of has like a better name to it. That's been a good thing to figure out. And also, yeah, PJ Tucker. Get him out of here. 38 years old. He said he was unhappy. He wants a different role. Like, what role are you looking for? Like, are you
he wants to run pick and rolls, okay?
he wants to take 10 threes a game or something. I don't see the you know who should pick him up though? Detroit. Buy him out, sign PJ Tucker, instill a winning culture in Detroit. See, we're connecting all the pieces here.
It's all interlinked. On your original question, can the Clippers keep this up? The big thing is going to be, can they stay healthy? If this stretch of playing every game, playing sometimes big minutes even, and playing back to backs, I think I played like 40 minutes. Kawhi played 40 minutes against Portland. I was like, what the hell are you doing, Ty? But if this is like it's actually improving conditioning and health, playing all these minutes and playing all these games, if that's something that's able to build as a strength rather than eventually wear these guys down, then like I do think this is a team that has to be in that contender conversation that we added the Lakers to last week without you here, and I think would be talking about the Sixers and as our team of the week as well.
I would have put them in I would have put the Lakers in the contender conversation. I feel like I understood that they had the ceiling to win the title, whether I liked it or not. I think the Clippers have the size and the on all positions to handle the bigger teams right now, the better teams, like handle Jokic or Embiid or LeBron and Davis, because they do have, like, when Plumlee gets healthy and Tyson playing well. And I think, like, Kawhi and Paul George just will give those teams fits, because those guys are really hard to guard on the wing. I was trying to think of something more thoughtful, but that's kind of my analysis. Is like, it's just really hard to guard Kawhi Leonard and Paul George at the same time. God forbid if James Harden gets hot. But I did want to mention, so we saw the debut of the Phoenix Big Three. They finally played one game together, briefly, like super briefly, before Beal got hurt one more time. Did you see that? What did you think?
Yeah, it's... was looking like it's the end of what you had termed, I think it was you, elder abuse, which is Kevin Durant playing all these minutes, playing every position, and the team was totally hopeless when he wasn't doing everything. And coming into the season without a point guard, I didn't have a lot of concern about it because you had Booker and you had Beal, who add together to equal one point guard. But when you've got one of those guys out, or you've got both of those guys out, the offense becomes really rough, and it becomes Kevin Durant. You have to literally do everything at, 42 years old or whatever it is. And so to have Beal back was looking like it was going to put an end to the elder abuse, get an offensive flow that actually makes sense, get a guy who can, another guy who can dribble the ball up the court without turning it over, can dribble the ball up and make a pass. To initiate an offense. Like, they don't have anyone on the roster who can do that outside of Booker, Beal, and Durant. Beal's health is actually, I think, a real concern at this point. Like, he's looking like he's in for a 20-game season. You know, Kevin Durant has been incredible this year. He's still one of the most efficient scorers in the league, can still score from, absolutely everywhere with an array of moves, and offers a lot of as a help defender and as a good passer on the wing. But he's getting older, and if you have this all-in team with an aging superstar, I think it's really hard to have a lost season, which is what it is looking like, just based on the fact that Beal can't get healthy.
He just can't, and it's being injury prone, but it's also just bad luck. I mean, he just landed on someone's foot taking a jumper. I'll mention the game they all played together. It was a loss to the Nets, but I'm not going to get too caught up in that. There, when those guys played, I mean, like, Booker was plus 16 and whatnot. KD was fine. Beal played 33 minutes, took 9 shots, hit 2 threes, was 2 of 2, and just it looked like it flowed. I had mentioned previously before the season that I didn't see Beal being like this knockdown 3-point shooter because his percentages aren't great, but I don't know if that was very smart. I think he'll just take a lot more wide open threes and probably hit them at a much better clip. I thought it was a good look for their first time together. The first game that Beal played, it was against the Golden State, and KD was out. Like, as soon as Beal was ready, KD's like, dude, I need a fucking break. Get me out. Like, I'm like, sorry.
Thank God you're here. You can run everything. I'm taking a day off.
Seriously. And then against the Nets, they all play. And then against, I'm blanking on the most recent game, but Beal played like 3 minutes and twisted his ankle. I think the ceiling, though, I mean, just in that brief moment, I do think I can see them winning, going to the conference finals with those three guys healthy. But is Bradley Beal going to play that many games? He's already been eliminated from the All-NBA conversation, from any awards, because he's missed 17 games. It's over for him. Can he play 17 games? He's missed 17 games. Like, is he going to get to 17 games played? I mean, I don't know how long the ankle's going to hold him out for, but I just don't know if the Suns are more of a concept, just a vague idea that might exist, or can this really be played on a basketball court?
I think another thing with the Suns that I was wrong about coming into the season, the inverse of what I was wrong about with the Lakers, is that some of these Lakers guys who were, minimums, not good players, have found a way to, have found a role that is complementary around LeBron. And they have actually found solid role players who keep them in games. Whereas for the Suns, outside of Eric Gordon, who could have had more money elsewhere, but decided to take a minimum to play for the Suns, and maybe like Grayson Allen, who makes some shots, like, there is no one on that roster, of these sort of minimum role player guys who is looking like an NBA rotation, consistent NBA rotation player. And I thought coming into the season with just all the swings that they had, it's like, I believed in a lot of these guys. And I was like, even if that guy doesn't work out, even if it's not Bates Diop,
Nasir Little.
It's Yeah, or Onesi a little, or it's Yuta Watanabe is still going to be able to shoot. He's proven to be a decent NBA player. But the fact that all of these guys are not playing well makes it even more difficult for the Suns, both to withstand injuries, but also as a sort of a long-term contender prospect.
I think the thing is, you need your top superstars, right? And they have that. But you still need your middle men to kind of carry the weight. And they just got so many 10th men that they're like, this equals a fourth best player. They're like, not really. You can't just combine them all into one super NBA player. You're still going to be looking at lineups where they're starting Chimezie Metu. Chimezie Metu was the worst player on the Kings last season. I thought he was terrible. And he is out there getting 20 minutes a night, and you go from KD, Booker, and Beal, this is great, but if Eric Gordon all of a sudden is your third best guy, you need a better middle class for your team than that.
Mm. It's just like the state of our economy, it's the shrinking middle class in Phoenix.
That's very true, very true. Phoenix currently is the 10, is the 10 seed. They're 13-12, and I think they're gonna. I feel like them and Golden State are gonna kind of be fighting for that kind of lower play in, because the Rockets won 5 in a row. They've rebounded from their slide. How do you feel about Golden State? The Draymond incident happened, right? That wasn't last week. That was after last week's pod, so brand new for the Hoop Simple.
Yeah, I mean. Such a disappointing phenomenon that Draymond Green continues to just lose his team games by just flipping out for no reason. And the fact that Adam Silver is I am suspending you indefinitely is insane. I didn't even know that he could do that for,
I didn't know. I'd never seen that before. Foul. Usually it had been. Even Ja got 25 games or Ja got whatever. It's all right, you're done, dude.
Even Ron Artest, fighting fans in the crowd, they gave him his, whatever amount.
I think it was 60 games. It was just the rest of the season. They just said, you're going home for the end of time.
The fact that Adam Silver is just I don't even know what to do with you, bro. Just go sit at home until I figure it out. It's just an insane indictment of his... lapses in discipline.
It's interesting because we've been watching Draymond for a long time, and I don't remember him even being like this. He was fiery, he was passionate, he kicked people in the nuts. It happened, but the hitting and the kicking, the hitting and the stomping, I feel like that's a new thing where he's just for some reason he's super frustrated, and maybe it's because he won 80% of his games over the past 4 years or 5 years, or 7 years, I guess. That he was just comfortable, and when he lost, it was few and far between. But now, on a team that isn't great, he loses his temper all the time, and you're still getting this awesome Steph season. He's still a top five player in the league. Steph is dragging this fucking team, and Draymond is while Steph is doing that, Draymond is in the corner boxing with the other team's European center. He's finding the tallest white guy and just fucking wailing on him. And Steph is probably dude, I'm trying so hard to win this game. Can you please stop attacking people?
Oh God, what was I going to say?
I don't see the avenue for them to be a contender. I just don't like this team very much. I think Steph is dragging this team to 500. Without him, this is one of the worst teams in the league. It's just kind of a weird roster. You're getting a pretty bad Klay Thompson season, his lapses in judgment in terms of shot selection and game time decisions, and also just being cold from three generally. Chris Paul is whatever. He's not as good as I thought he'd be. And the Andrew Wiggins regression to the worst player in the league has been kind of shocking.
Yeah.
Although, I don't know. I just don't know if it's shocking, though. I've had to go back and forth because it's shocking because he was playing at such a high level, but this is what he was in Minnesota, so I guess it makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Is it more shocking that random elite 3-and-D star that he became out of nowhere wasn't real than, it was? That was one of the most random and unexpected just, progressions as a player to go from, an efficient one-way chucker to... 3-and-D superstar. Being real would be more shocking than it just being a random blip. But this Warriors season kind of reminds me of maybe it was just last season where they don't have Wiggins as a good player, Clay is rough. I mean, they are closing games with, you know, Brandon Pajemski, who is sort of this season's Anthony Lamb.
Anthony Lamb, my goodness, yeah.
Anthony Lamb, by the way, was the Warriors' like fifth best player last year and is now playing in New Zealand. So that tells you, you know, sort of the state of their team.
This team is pretty good when Steph Curry plays. They are the worst team on God's green earth when he doesn't. He has a box plus minus of 7.2. Andrew Wiggins has a box plus minus of negative 6.9. I mean, that's the worst. That's the worst in the league, if I remember correctly. I just don't know. And like Saric, sorry, Lisco 2000, but like I just don't like the Dario Saric minutes very much either. Do you?
It is kind of like an interesting option as like another big guy who knows how to pass the ball. When you don't have Draymond to rely on and you can't run anything with second units, it is like an interesting lineup. And he did have that random season where he became like an elite rim protector in Phoenix. I haven't checked what his numbers are like this year, but ITSC is not so good.
Do you have any other teams you want to touch on?
No, I've been focused on the Sixers and they played the least interesting week of basketball.
No, they did. They did for a certain. The Eastern Conference is not great. Looking at it now, the tenth seed is the Raptors, who are 10-15. The 10th seed in the Western Conference is 13-12. I think you will have to have a winning record to make that last play-in spot in the Western Conference. And I don't think that's going to be the case for the Eastern Conference. But yeah, Jalen Brunson had 50 points on perfect 3-point shooting. The Cavs dead? Because they lost Garland with a broken jaw and Mobley for an injury, I forget, but it's like 68 weeks. What's the prognosis?
Yeah, I mean that might just end their season, to be quite frank. Not just for the reason that like they'll miss Mobley and obviously, you know, Garland more so. But the fact that the guys they got to fill out their bench, which I did like coming into the season, the fact that they haven't worked out, like Georges Niang, is not a starting caliber of player, which he might be forced to be. You know, like Tristan Thompson is on this roster. Like that's how desperate these guys are.
Yeah, he played, and I went to a Kings Cavs game, and he played, dude. Like he was. Tristan Thompson was washed when he was on the Kings. He was on the Kings like 4 years ago. I thought he was cooked. I genuinely thought he was our last. Or we were his last stop.
Yeah, and the fact that he's not just there for vibes, but they actually need him is a real indictment of this team. And they are, just going to really struggle for depth. Is this like a stealth, like tank team? Does, you know, Donovan Mitchell come up with an ankle sprain maybe too? And
I think lose he comes a few up games with with a trade. I think he comes up with a trade idea and has the front office like, please trade me, which is always, you know, always interesting. I think the Knicks have just been just waiting for that basically.
Yeah, I was talking about this the other day, and the two interesting things to consider with Donovan Mitchell being traded. The first is he never asked to play for the Cavs. He never signed with the Cavs. He didn't ask to be traded to the Cavs. He's there with no say in being there. And like he's you know, being good about it. He's a professional, but he never asked to be there. And then the other thing, the contrary, is that he has 3 years left on his contract. And so, you know, the later you get in your contract, the more leverage you have. You know, he can tell the Cavs, like, I'm not re-signing. You're going to lose me next year, so you might as well trade me. The fact that it's 3 years, like, that leverage is weaker. But, you know, it's looking like it could be a quiet trade deadline. Like, there's not much of a market. You know, you look at the teams around the league who have a player that they would be wanting to give up, and it doesn't seem like there's a lot of guys. So maybe this is, you know, Adam Silver needs to put a thumb on the scale to drum up some interest, and this is the Donovan Mitchell second trade.
Could be. Don't tell Jack the Kings fan that. He's been sending me Harrison Barnes trade ideas every day. he's like, it's funny.
Maybe I should rephrase that. There's no one that a team is willing to give up that is also in demand. Like, that's no one's true. Trying to trade for Harrison Barnes.
it's been so tough. Like, I was so happy with the Barnes re-signing, and then I'm like, man, that was actually a huge mistake. We have to touch on a little bit. Like, the greatest shooting game of all time, the greatest shooting game ever, Keegan Murray had 47 points last night on 12 of 15 shooting from three. It's the most efficient 12 three-pointer game ever. Also the second most rebounds grabbed in a 12 three-pointer game. Although Klay Thompson had a 13 three-pointer game in like 24 minutes against Chicago, he could have hit 20 threes that game. So it's a little finicky. When guys get that hot, the games are never close. And so it's like, all right, we're going to take them out. I made a video earlier yesterday, or I guess it'd be the 16th, saying that I would trade Keegan Murray and Davion for Lauri Markkanen. And like, there was a Twitter poll and only like 29% of votes said they would make that trade. And I think those people are out of their fucking minds. I think that's insanity. I like Keegan Murray, but like, I think his ceiling is basically like Lauri Markkanen. And then he goes out and drops 47 points on Lauri Markkanen's skull.
Yeah. And you're like, all right, how many first round picks are you guys including to get Keegan Murray?
I think the other thing is like, a quick discussion on the trade market. The Thunder can beat anybody's offer on anybody. They could beat anyone's offer like four times in a row. They have that kind of treasure chest. But like, if you're trading with the Thunder, I would ask for more, like the Thunder tax. I'd be like, no. Like, yeah, you guys have way too much just to, like, I'm not giving you this guy for, I'm not going to allow you to build like this super team just because you have so many assets. Like, you owe me extra because you have so much.
Yeah, right. It's like Warren Buffett comes into like your car sales yard, you know, like you're not giving him the discount. You're saying, no, like you are paying the freaking, you know, you're paying the price that's on the window. I'm not haggling with you.
Nah, I totally agree. And so like, I mean, I think it'd be Keegan and like and more to get Lauri Markkanen still. But maybe the financial flexibility is more important. I have no idea at this point. Because Keegan has been pretty great defensively. But did you have anything else you want to touch on before we say adios?
Let me just check if I've got any more Sixers notes and just throw out some random stats.
Sounds great. I like Sixers notes.
Embiid is posting up even more. From about 16% to 20% of his positions now are post-ups. What else do I have? Tyrese Maxey turns the ball over 1.3 times a game. The dude's scoring 25 and dishing almost 7 assists, and he's turning over 1.3 times. He turns the ball over on 5.7% of his possessions, which is the best in the NBA among guards. And that is all. There's I've emptied out the notebook of random stats that I pulled.
That sounds great. The Sixers are they are the best team of the league when playing the worst team in the league. Elite analysis.
And every other team statistically.
That's true. All right, Dylan, where can the people find you?
On the Hoops Temple podcast.
Sounds great. You can find me, Possible Chairs, on TikTok, one word, and this podcast all the time. Thanks for listening.
And what's the Twitter handle?
That's right. I fucking forgot about that. you can find me, Possible Chairs, on TikTok, one word, this podcast all the time, and Possible Chairs on Twitter, except for my mom, because she followed me on Twitter and I blocked her because I am not a good boy on that app. I post on TikTok knowing my grandma follows me and my mom follows me. I did not take those precautions on Twitter, so sorry, mom.